As I was saying, my apologies, everybody. It was one of those mornings that last phone call that was extremely, extremely important that somebody just wouldn't let me off the phone. And it was indeed important. It was. No, that's not an important call. Not an important call. I couldn't trust a word Mr. Peres would be saying to me. It's pretty clear now to everybody, unfortunately, that we can trust Arafat. When Arafat says there's a letter, it's true. And when the government says no, you can't trust the government of the state of Israel, which is, of course... Yeah, we were saying we wouldn't buy a used car from that man. It's true, but now we know for certain. Now we know for certain. All right, but we're going to learn Torah. Vayikach Korach. This week's parasha is Parashat Korach. Vayikach Korach ben Yitzhar ben Kahat ben Levi v'datam v'aviram b'nei Eliyav v'on ben Peled b'nei Reuven. Parashat Korach, as Rashi begins by saying, Yafo hinidreshet, this parasha is explained very clearly in the Medrash Tanchuma, and Rashi is going to be quoting extensively from the Medrash in his interpretation of the parasha. There are some darshanu who say Yofahin Idreshes, this is a parasha that it's always beautiful to study and darshan this parasha, because unfortunately there's always machlekes by Klal Yisrael. And unfortunately, there's always something that we can learn from Parashat Korach. Of course, Parashat Korach seems to be talking to us at all times. And what we will try to do, of course, and see is in what way is Parashat Korach relevant to the particular situation in which we find ourselves right now. Of course, the grammatic problem with the first pasuk is clear. It's blatant. Vayikach Korach, and Korach took. What did he take? The object is missing. And Korach took. Therefore Rashi says a number of pshatim. He brings the targum that says Vayikach Korach, that Korach separated himself. He took himself off to the side. He removed himself from the mainstream of the Jewish people. Korach took himself out of the community. And that's why Targum Onkelos, the Targum translates the word Vayikach here different than it is in any other place. Vayikach usually translates means yes, to take. You take something. But over here it says V'it Palag. It Palag. You can hear the word miflaga in it. He separated himself. He created his own group. So that the Vayikach is Korach taking himself. Of course, there are others who say that Vayikach Korach really extends into the next pasuk. The next pasuk is going to talk about 250 people, 250 leaders of Israel who joined him in the rebellion. They are the ones whom he took. And therefore, Rashi says, how did he take them? And this is a comment that we've made a number of times. You don't take people. People are not objects. You can take an object, you cannot take an intelligent human being. And therefore Rashi will comment, and does indeed comment, where it says, Vayikach, Moshe took the Levim. God says to Moshe, Kachet Aaron, take your brother Aaron, and tell him that he's going to be the Kohen Gadol. In each one of these cases, Rashi says, Kohen, take them, bidvorim, with words. You know, a human being is not one whom you take as an object. You can influence a human being. You can talk to a human being. You can attempt to sway a human being. Unfortunately, of course, it's possible to sway human beings with all sorts of words. Not necessarily true. Vayikach Korach Korach took the congregation with him, his rebels, he took them with him with words. And we're going to see what were the words that he used. Korach was a demagogue of the highest order. We're going to talk about the coalition. We're going to talk about the coalition that he formed, an unholy coalition. Because the problem with this coalition is there was only one thing that united them. They were united in their opposition to Moshe. But each one had his own agenda. Which means if they would have succeeded in removing Moshe, that's when the real fun was going to begin, because then the coalition of forces was going to end up destroying itself, because everybody wanted to be the leader. Everybody had a vested interest here. Korach is from the tribe of Levi, and he feels that he's been overlooked. As Rashi points out, that Korach's complaint was there were four children that were born to Kahat, three children to Levi, Gershon, Kahat, Umedari, and then in Parshat Vayera it says Ubnei Kahat, and the children of Kahat were Amram, Yitzhar, Chevron, and Uziel. There were four children born to Kahat, the son of Levi. So Korach's complaint was, well, Amram is the one whose children took both the kingship, and the high priesthood. Moshe became the king. He appointed his brother to be Kohen Gadol. So now the next position of importance in the tribe of Levi should go to who? To the next son, who is Yitzhar. Korach is Korach ben Yitzhar. He should be in line for the next position. The next position was the prince of the tribe of Levi. So he was overlooked, and the prince of the tribe of Levi that was appointed by Moshe was Elitzophon ben Uziel. Uziel is the youngest of the four children of God. The four children again are Amram, Yitzhar, Chevron, and Uziel. That means he feels that he was overlooked. He was, what's the term we use over here? Mikupach. I'm still trying to look for a good English translation, and I don't think that there's a word that makes you feel as mikupach, as being mikupacht. So everybody feels that they've been overlooked, or they've been shortchanged, or they haven't received their fair share. Somebody out there is out to get them. Everybody walks around with this feeling. Incidentally, for some people it may be true. You know, don't think it's just a figment of your imagination. You may very well be getting short jimps. Dasan Varviram and Un Ben Pelet were from the tribe of Reuven. The tribe of Reuven had its own agenda. Reuven was the firstborn, and he was overlooked completely. The birthright of firstborn was given to the tribe of Yosef, not to them. If they're not going to get a double portion of the land of Israel, the double portion of the land of Israel is going to go to Yosef. The 250 leaders of the community who are going to join this coalition of forces, our rabbis tell us, were all firstborn. They were bechorim, bechorot. And the bechor originally had the position that was then taken over after the sin of the Egel. That position was given to the Kohanim. So we're talking about people, each one feels that he's been hurt. And he's been hurt by Moshe. So I say therefore that if Moshe would indeed be removed, if the rebellion would be successful, that's when the real fun would start. Then would come the great machlokes between Korach and all of his coalition partners, Dalson Vavidam and Ondan Pelet, and the 250 members of the Sanhedrin, of the Sanhedrin, the courts that joined him. There's, of course, the famous Mishnah in Pirkei Avot, and all of the Farshim point this out, that the Mishnah Novos that says, Machloket shehi l'shem shamayim, a machloket that is for the sake of heaven, that is a genuine, honest difference of opinion, which is a struggle for, a striving for truth, so for lehit kayim, something will come from it. Something lasting will come from it. What kind of machloket is machloket l'shem shamayim? The machloket of Hillel and Shammai. Hillel and Shammai were looking for the truth. This is what they were searching for. So there were differences of opinion. Differences of opinion are legitimate. The chol machloket, every machloket, she'ein l'shem shamayim, a machloket that is not for the sake of heaven, ain so polit kayim. Nothing is going to remain of it at the end. It will simply destroy all of the people involved in it. And the Mishnah says, what is a machloket that is not l'shem shamayim, that is not for the sake of heaven, that is not an honest and genuine search for the truth, but it is destructive machloket? That is the machloket of Korach v'adato, Korach and his community. So of course, the Mefarshim point out that if you're telling me that the two sides of a machloket that are l'shem shamayim are Hillel and Shammai, then over here you should have told us the Mishnah should have said that the two sides of the machloket are Korach and Moshe. But it doesn't say Korach and Moshe, because the truth is that Moshe is not a part of this machloket. The real machloket is Korach v'adato, between Korach and his congregation and his community, the unholy partners who have joined him in this alliance against Moshe Rabbeinu. On ben Pelet, in this first pasuk, we come across a fellow called On ben Pelet. He was from Reuven. He appears once and disappears from the rest of the parasha. We're going to hear about Korach, we're going to hear about Dotan Vaviram, we're going to hear about the 250 who join, and On ben Pelet simply disappears. I was going to say, it seems as though the earth swallowed him up. But that's not what happened. The earth is going to swallow the rest of them up, and not On ben Pelet. Says the Gemara in Sanhedrin, On ben Pelet ishto hitzilako. On ben Pelet was saved by his wife. His wife saved him. The good woman who stood behind On ben Pelet, he came home for lunch that day. The day of the Machloket, he came home for lunch. And she told him, listen, On, if Moshe wins, you're still going to be On. If Korach wins, you're going to be On. What are you going to gain out of this whole Machlekes? Nothing, no good will come from all of this. I'm sure that he must have made some protestations, you know, something like, mind your own business. He must probably, to a woman like that, he must probably said it in a nicer way. But it seems that she sat herself at the entrance to her tent with her hair uncovered, so that anybody who came, like, to call him Aon, you know, it's time to come, the machloket in the beginning again, sort of, Mizantlofen. And On ben Pelet was saved by his wife. By Yokum Luftei Moshe. And they got up before Moshe, by Moshe Mibnei Yisrael, and people from the children of Israel, Chamishim Umasayim, 250 Nisi'ei Eidah, Kri'ei Mo'ed, Anshei Shem. Princes of the community, Kri'ei Mo'ed, people who were called to give their advice at every important occasion, Anshei Shem, people of great name. It may also, therefore, mean that precisely was their downfall, on Shei Shein, people who wanted a great name. They were seeking publicity. They wanted power and prominence. They were not satisfied with their position within the community. They aspired for more. And in their aspiration for more, they destroyed themselves. Vayikahalu al Moshe ve'al Aaron, they gathered against Moshe and Aaron, vayomru aleihem, and they said to them, Rav Lachem, it's already too much. You've taken too much for yourself. Ki kol ha'edo kulam kedoshim, the entire community is holy. Remember, he is the great He's the great populist, Korach. He's a man of the people. He's concerned about everybody. We are all a holy people, and nobody really has the right to tell us what to do. This is a man who's for the people, concerned about the people, and he's going to take on Moshe and Aaron because it's only the people whom he cares about. The entire community is holy, and God is in their midst. Why do you lord it over the community of God? The timing of the Korach rebellion is, of course, very significant. The timing for the Korach rebellion is following Parashat Shlach. Fact is that here there is a famous machloket between the Ibn Ezra and the Ramban. The Ibn Ezra says that the events of Parashat Korach really took place earlier, after Elitzofan had been appointed the prince of the tribe of Levi. That upset Korach, and he went out to rebel. The Ramban, as he does a number of places in Torah, says, "Nah, the Ibn Ezra, on his own, decides that the Torah does not follow chronological order. No, Torah always follows in chronological order, unless there are overriding reasons why it cannot be in chronological order." He says this is following the chronological order because it's only after Parashat Shlach that it would have been conceivable for anybody to rebel against Moshe. Until Parashat Shlach, Moshe was the leader who was taking them to the promised land. He was loved, he was feared, he was revered. All of Israel stood in awe of him. Anybody who would have attempted to say a word against Moshe would have been torn apart by the community. But now the Jewish people in the desert are going through a period of severe depression. Everything that they've been looking forward to, everything that they had planned on, everything is over, it's shattered. They're going to remain in the desert for the rest of their lives. Another 39 years they're going to have to wander in the desert. It is only now that Moshe Rabbeinu's great plan has been put on hold. He's not going to be leading them into the promised land. Only now is it possible for people to rise up against Moshe and survive. In the sense that they will not be torn apart by the wrath of the crowd. There's something else that's important over here. I believe that people who have no goal and no direction in life don't have something that they are working toward are the ones that are usually going to fall into machlekes. If you have nothing to do, but madunish tzitzin, what do? Get in loshen hara, and loshen hara, of course, leadeth unto machlokes. You know, that's the way it is. One thing leads to the next. We are talking about a people who are going nowhere. Now they know they're going nowhere. 39 years they're going to remain in the desert. No goal, there's nothing to fire their souls, there's nothing to inspire them. Most of Klal Yisrael has no choice now but simply to wait for death. That's what's going to happen to them. And their children are the ones who are going to enter the promised land. But they're not going to see it. They're never going to see it. When you have nothing that inspires you, when you have nothing that's meaningful in life, person falls into, yes, lashon hara and machlekes, unless of course one is able to find meaning in study of Torah, in intellectual pursuits. And that's what's going to have to happen to this generation. If they are not going to become what Chazal later will call the Dor Dea, the generation of knowledge and intellect, a generation that's going to immerse itself into the study of Torah, if they're not going to do that, it's going to be Milchome and Machloket all the way. The human consciousness, the human mind abhors a vacuum. In a vacuum, what's going to come in over there are the worst sophists of all. And that's exactly what happens right here. 39 years to go, not going anywhere. So, the only excitement in life, the only excitement left in life is going to be a little machlokes over there. A little machlokes. Vayishma Moshe, and Moshe heard, let's go a little further. Vayishma Moshe, Moshe heard Vayipol al panav, and he fell on his face. I have not yet fully worked out the falling on the face. Moshe does that a number of times here. Later on in Pasuk 22 it says, Vayiplu al pinehem, they fell upon their faces. Vayomru, and they said, God, one man sins, and upon the entire congregation, you get angry. There seems to be something like Vayipol al panav seems when one is at a loss of what to do, it seems helplessness, and this is certainly not what a leader should be doing at a moment of great crisis. We had the same thing in last week's Sedra, when they said to one another, let us appoint a leader who is going to take us back to Egypt. So it says, "Vayipol Moshe va'aron al pneim lefnei kol kahal adat bnei Yisrael." Moshe and Aaron fell upon their faces before the entire community. And Yoshua ben Nun and Kaleb ben Yefuna tore their garments. Rashi, of course, does see the Vayipol al panav as meaning sense of helplessness. What can I do now? Moshe Rabbeinu says, Shekvar zeh biyodam sirchon rivi, this is their fourth, the fourth time that they have erred so badly. And Moshe felt that he doesn't have the ability to pray for them anymore. How long is one going to turn to God? He turned to God after the sin of the Egel, after the sin of the Asafsuf in Baalotcha, those who wanted basar, who wanted meat. He turned and he prayed again to God after the sin of the Meraglim. How long can you keep turning to God and say, Rabbeinu Shebaolam, Abrahmanes? It does represent a sense of helplessness. But then Moshe immediately begins the process of at least attempting to enter into dialogue with the rebels. He spoke to Korach and to his entire congregation, saying, "Boker v'yoda Hashemet Hashalom, Bok, in the morning God is going to let us know who is the one who is appointed by him, Be'et HaKadosh, and the one who is set aside as holy, V'hikriv Elav, and he will bring him close, Be'et Asher Yivchar Bo Yakriv Elav, the one whom God chooses, whom he will bring." And he tells that each one of them should take should take a pan and put incense in it, and the incense that will be accepted by God in the morning, that will be an indication whom God has chosen. Of course, Rashi points out that he says until morning. Why doesn't he do this immediately? Because he's hoping that by morning they will see the light. By morning, maybe the machlokes will pass, and the bale machlokes will retreat and withdraw from the position that they have taken. The Gemara says, "Kol haboreach min hasrora, whoever flees from a position of kavod, hasrora rodefet achrav." The position runs after him. Somebody who asks for a position, who demands a position, you can be absolutely certain that that person is unfit for it, and that's precisely why he doesn't get it, because he asks for it. Well, the Rabbeinu Shlomo didn't know that Yitzhar was the next son? Obviously, listen, one thing I can tell you, there's one one somebody you can trust, and that's the Rebbein Shem. Yeah. He, God knows best. I can't say that for many other people. There's no question about it. The Rebbein Shlalem knows best. Korach certainly was unfit by virtue of the fact that he sought the position. He wanted it. And unfortunately, I imagine that that's the problem with many of our people who are in political life. The more you want it, the more you want it. I mean, maybe I've become a cynic already. It took me only 10 months to become a cynic. There are very few people in the political system who are statesmen. The period of statesmen was probably ended with Menachem Begin. That's it. How many statesmen were there in the 20th century? And I'm not even sure. I mean, there were some that we thought were statesmen, but weren't. We found out later they weren't such a close statesmen. There are not many, many great people. People who are in this business are in this business for them, for themselves, and they lose sight of what the responsibility is. Oh, let's see. First, he's. Not going to be my downfall. All right. Let's go further. Pasuk 8. Vayomer Moshe el Korach. Moshe said to Korach, Shinu na b'nei Levi, please listen, the sons of Levi. You see, look what happened over here. In Pasuk 5, it says that he speaks to Korach vel koladato. You know, I'm going to put you to work. Look at Pasuk 5, and then look at Pasuk 8. Pasuk 5 and Pasuk 8. In Pasuk 5, Moshe speaks. In Pasuk 8, Moshe speaks. What's the difference between the two? Why couldn't they all have been one speech? And what are the differences between the two? All right. So first of all, the first thing you have to notice is Pasuk 5 begins with the word Vayedaber. Vayedaber means this strong talk. Pasuk 8 begins with the word Vayomer. Vayomer is all soft. And in Pasuk 5, he is speaking to Korach vel Koladato, all the 250, the entire coalition of forces. And there he tells them there's going to be a test, a divine test, to decide who has been chosen by God. What Moshe is doing in Pasuk 8, he really wants to divide and conquer. He wants to separate. Who's he speaking to in Pasuk 8? He's speaking to B'nai Levi. He's not speaking to Datan Daviram. He's not speaking to the 250. He's just talking to Levi, of which Korach is a part. And he says, Shimuna, please, listen, B'nai Levi. Do you hear the softness of the Pasuk? The Pasuk is soft. The Pasuk is gentle. And he has begun the process of attempting to divide. If he can divide, all you need is to get one man in the coalition to change his mind, right? One man in the coalition. For 10 months we've been trying. One man in the coalition should change his mind, and before you know it, there will be cracks in the whole coalition. This is precisely what Moshe wants to do. So now, first he tells them, Pasuk 5, he tells them what's going to be the test. There's going to be a test. And the test is going to be a test to the finish. The one who doesn't pass this test is going to die. Because whoever doesn't pass this test is somebody who's unworthy of bringing Ketoret, and one who's not permitted to bring Ketoret and does bring Ketoret, the punishment is death. That's going to be the ultimate test. There's no such thing as failing and surviving. Failing means one has lost all. But that's not what Moshe wants to do. Moshe is telling them at the outset what the ultimate will be. But now what he wants to do, divide softly. And maybe he'll find a break in the coalition. From Yom Moshe al-Korach, Shimuna b'nei Levi, Hama'at mikem, is it not enough for you? Ki hivdil elekei Yisrael etchem mi'adat Yisrael, that the God of Israel has separated you from the congregation of Israel, separated you separate and higher and better, la'akriv etchem elav, to bring you close to Him, la'avod et avodat mishkan Hashem, that you will do the service in the tabernacle of God, v'la'amod lifnei ha'idol l'shartam, you are the ones who have been singled out to stand before the community and serve them. God brought you close, you, yes, Korach, you, and all of the tribe of Levi with you. You're going to ask also for the priesthood. Lachain ato v'chol adoscha. You and your entire community, hanoadim al Hashem. Therefore, you really don't have a complaint. He's telling Korach that you and the entire community around you are all going to suffer. And Aaron, why do you complain against Aaron? Aaron certainly is not guilty. What would you have expected at the end of this pasuk? What would you have expected? I asked a simple question. Who said that? An answer. We should have expected a response from Korach, but Korach doesn't respond. Korach doesn't respond. I think I brought my medrash. Yes, the medrash says the following. Kol hadvarim ha'ele pieis Moshe leKorach. With all of these words, Moshe attempted to appease Korach. Ve'ein atomotze shehishivo, and we don't find that Korach answered. Why? Says the Medrash, lefi shehoya pikeach birishato. He was a wise Rasha. He was pikeach birishato. Amar said, im ani mashivo. If I'm going to answer him, that means we're going to get into a dialogue, a discussion, yes. Yodea ani boshu chochem gadol, I know that Moshe is very wise. Achshav yekapcheini b'dvorov kipoach, he's going to get the upper hand over me with words. Umekalkaleini, and he's going to ruin me. Korach knows that if he enters into a dialogue with Moshe, he is finished. And Moshe is going to have that much influence on me. Even against my will, I'm going to have to agree with him. Mutov shelo ezokeglo, better that I don't even deal with him. When Moshe saw that there's no point in continuing with Korach, he separated himself. You know what this medrash is? This medrash really is the no space between Pasuk 11 to Pasuk 12. Something had to happen there, and nothing happened. And the Medrash tells us precisely why nothing happened. Korach decided there was going to be no discussion between him and Moshe. Therefore, Vayishlach Moshe likro l'datam v'lavidam b'nei Eliyav, Moshe sent to call Dothan, Aviram, the sons of Eliyahu. Now he wants to take another part of the coalition in the hope that if he is able to get these two fellas, if they're going to break with the coalition, maybe it will all crumble. Vayomram, and they said, Lo Nala, we're not coming up. We're not coming up. I wonder, Rashi says over here that this was like a prophecy that they were saying. We're not going up. We're gone. We're not going to Eretz Yisrael. We're not going up. We're going down. We're going down. I don't know why they would have used the term altogether, Na'aleh. Listen to the words of Dothan v'Aviram, and these are the words that I want to study them more carefully. Hama'at ki ha'elitanu me'eretz zavas chol avu dvash. Is it not enough that you took us up out of a land flowing with milk and honey, lahamitenu b'midbar, to kill us in the desert, ki tistore aleinu gam yistore, that you should rule over us too. Ach lo el eretz zoras cholo v'dvash ha'v'yotanu, you have not brought us to a land flowing with milk and honey. Batitan lono nachal asol erkerem, you haven't given us an inheritance of field and vineyard. Ha'ene ha'anashem ha'em t'makeh geist oishtech in the oigin for mention. You're going to poke people's eyes out, lo nala, we will not go on. Vayichal Moshe ma'od. Moshe got very angry. Let's analyze this a little bit better. First of all, they have made a statement here that is most probably the ugliest in all of Torah. For Jews, the term, the description, zavas, cholov, udvash, flowing with milk and honey, describes only one place on the face of this earth, and that's Eretz Yisrael. And these Rishayim say, not enough that you took us out of a land flowing with milk and honey, they have now used the term zavas, cholov, udvash to describe Mitzrayim. Can you imagine? The land of their enslavement is the land flowing with milk and honey. I'll give you a mashal. When you refer to the atomic bomb falling over Hiroshima and Nagasaki as a Holocaust equal to the Holocaust that happened to the Jews, you are making one of the most ugliest statements possible. Japanese and Jews, Japanese who were killed by the atom bomb, and Jews, 6 million, who were put to death in the crematorium, this is all the same to Shimon Peres. This is Holocaust, and this is Holocaust. People who went out to destroy the world and kill tens of millions of people, and all that's happening is they're getting theirs, so that more lives will not be lost. That's the same. It's the same thing. Like 6 million Jews think this is a Holocaust, and this is a Holocaust. Eretz Yisrael is Zoras Chol HaVidvash, and Eretz Mitzrayim is Zoras Chol HaVidvash. There are terms that are sanctified and holy, and they can describe only one thing. The term Shoah, unfortunately, was sanctified by 6 million lives to refer to one unique event in all of history. Kommt unser, our foreign minister, he's become a universalist. I don't think he's interested anymore in finding favor in the eyes of Jews. He's interested in finding favor in the eyes of the world, even if it means that he'll have to sell Jews and Jewish history at Eretz Yisrael. Down the drain, he will do that. Or if you can also say, you know, that the Eretz Zavas Chol HaVidvash is not only for one people, the Eretz Zavas Chol HaVidvash belongs to the two people. This is number one. There's been an ugly comparison, the ugliest of all. To take a term that was uniquely Jewish and uniquely a description of Eretz Yisrael, and to use that to describe Mitzrayim. Let me ask you, if somebody would refer to Germany as Eretz Zavas Chol HaVidvash, I can see already the looks on your faces over here, like it's a horror. The ugly comparison and the ugly abuse of a beautiful, unique Jewish term. You didn't bring us to an Eretz Avos Chol HaVidvash. But there's something else. There is something else about the response of Dasam Haviram that one of the Mefarshim of Torah, the Akedat Yitzchok, one of the early Mefarshim, never noticed it. He noticed it so beautifully. And that really is the problem with what Dosan Rabbeinu have to say. Just a comparison, Pasuk 9 and Pasuk 13. Pasuk 9, let me remind you, Pasuk 9 is Moshe Rabbeinu speaking to Korach and the tribe of Levi. Pasuk 13 is Dosan Vavinam speaking to Moshe. Do you see what's happening over here? They are using the same terminology that Moshe used, they're using. Do you know what they're doing? They're not talking to Moshe. They're mimicking him. They're making fun of him. What did Moshe say? Moshe turns to Korach and he says, Hama'at, is it not enough that God separated you from the congregation of Israel and gave you sanctity? Imagine now Dosan Vaviram like children. It's not enough, Hama'at. It's not enough that you took us out of a land flowing with milk and honey. No, somebody who takes the words, you're having a discussion with somebody, you're having an argument. And yes, you become very sarcastic, and now you become sarcastic by saying, whatever you said, yeah, you know, maybe you are a kugelager. That's what you are. Netzarim is a yeshua, then you're a kugelager, right? Nobody will ever understand. Anybody in America will listen to this tape, don't have a clue what I'm talking about. No, let them be in touch with me and ask me what a kugelager is and what a... I never knew what it was in my tongue. It's amazing. I'm learning Hebrew, I'm learning it. Yeah. or say if that same person would say... he says, Zelome Zizli, this doesn't move me. And I say back to him, you know what? You're not Mezizli. That's not communication. The moment, and this happens quite often, when a discussion becomes an argument, and instead of talking about the issue, what you really do is you begin to mimic and make fun of the person who's talking to you. At that moment, you know that no communication that is meaningful is taking place. That what has happened now is it has deteriorated into a brawl. And that's one of the reasons why Vayichal LeMoshe Ma'od. Pasuk 15, Moshe, and it's fascinating. The word Vayichal usually means anger. And you know what Rashi says here? Vayichal Moshe Ma'od. Vayichal Moshe Ma'od, Rashi says, Nitzta'er ad Nitzta'er ad Lima'od. Nitzta'er ad Lima'od. There's a difference between tsar and kas. Kas is anger, and tsar is pain. Tsar is pain. So a number of things you have to notice. Number one, it doesn't say that he gets angry or is in pain at Korach's silence. Why did Rashi say, now, it's quite clear that his Vayichar, whatever the word Vayichar means, the Vayichar is the result of Dosan Vaviram. Vayichar is the result of Dosan Vaviram. So, of course, it may very well be, and I think the term that's used by the Arkadas Yitzchak is very fascinating. He says the following about them. Besignon diburam, the style of their words, horu tachlis chatzifusam va'azusam. They demonstrated the ultimate in chutzpah and azus. Chutzpah, of course, doesn't have to be translated. It's an English word. It's a French word. It's an every word. Azus, we understand what azus is. There's something that is enough to get somebody angry, very angry. Yet Rashi Rashi does not translate the Vayichar as kas, as anger. Rashi translates the Vayichar as tsar. And I tell you, this morning I was looking desperately to find there's something strange about the Rashi, but I feel that we may very well be able to understand the Rashi. There's a difference between anger and tsar. Tsar is deep pain. I think that the pain comes for another reason. And I may very well be able to explain it with something that I think we said last year or 2 years ago, and it bears repetition because it's going to explain this Rashi. Later on in Sefer Devarim, I'm going to read a few psukim for you. In Sefer Devarim, chapter 11, it's in Parshat Ekel. Moshe Rabbeinu was speaking to the Jewish people. It's 39 years later. And he's going to tell them, love God, keep his commandments, his statutes, his laws. And he gives them a brief review of the major events of Jewish history that had been experienced by this people. And he tells them, listen, I'm not talking to people who haven't seen, I'm talking to people who've seen, you've experienced this all yourselves. What did you experience? Et ototav ve'et ma'asav, God's signs and his deeds that he did betoch Mitzrayim and in Egypt, leparo melech Mitzrayim, to Paro the king of Egypt, ulchol artzom, to his whole land. You little ones, you were there, you know exactly what he did. That's Pasuk 1. First Pasuk tells us about what God did to Paro in Mitzrayim and to his whole people. The next Pasuk. Ba'asher also l'chel Mitzrayim, what God did to the army of Egypt, l'susav u'l'irbo, his horses and his chariots, asher heitzif et mei yam suf al p'neim, that he brought the waters of the Red Sea over them, v'rod from acharechem, when they pursued you, v'yadem Hashem, and God destroyed them, ad ayom hazeh. Two major events. Event number one, what God did in Egypt. Event number two, kriyas yam suf. Number three, and what he did to you in the desert, until you came to this place, you know, for 40 years, 3 million people have been sustained and provided for by God in the desert, man, every day, the Amud Onan and the Amud Eish, day and night, water from a rock. And then he comes to the fourth event. The longest pasuk of all. Va'asher also l'Dotan v'Laviram, and what God did to Dotan v'Aviram b'nei Eliyav, the sons of Eliyav ben Ruvain, the son of Ruvain. Asher potz tohar, it's appeared that the earth opened up her mouth, v'tivla ein, and swallowed them, v'ed boteim in their homes, v'ed oholeim in their tents, v'ed kol ayukum, asher beragleim, and all of their possessions, v'kerev kol Yisrael, in the midst of all of Israel. A number of problems I have with this pasuk. Problem number one, like, that was an event on par with the other three that he's telling the all of Israel in the last year. This is what he has to tell them. And on par are the Eser Makos and Yitzias Mitzrayim, Kriyas Yamsuf, and sustaining the people for 40 years in the desert. And what God, and what he did to Dotan v'Aviram. But even more difficult is, why does he single out Dotan v'Aviram? Why doesn't he say Va'asher also what God did to Korach and Dotan v'Aviram? How do you leave out Korach? Who was the instigator? I was going to say the Yazam. I couldn't think of the English word anymore. Who initiated it? Who brought this coalition of forces together? Korach. So Korach, the one who brought it all together, is not even mentioned by Moshe. And so I asked, number one, is this a an event of such importance that it ranks together with the biggies, and it would have taken one more word to say Vasher Osam, what he did, Lekorach Uledatam Avinu. Korach was clearly the instigator, the initiator, the Yazam, the Parshas Korach, by Vikach Korach. Korach is the one who took. He took everybody. And the same thing happened to Korach, precisely. That's why I say that all that would have been necessary was simply one word, one name. Korach becomes so important by his absence here. Why leave him out? So I said, and I say it again, that what's happening over here is that while Moshe has forgiven Korach, forgiven and maybe forgotten Korach, he has not forgiven Dasam Vaviram and will never forgive Dasam Vaviram. Korach was a challenge to Moshe. Dasam Vaviram were a challenge to Eretz Yisrael. And I will explain. There's a famous letter that was written in 1920 by the Or Sameach of Meir Simcha. Or Sameach wrote the following. This was the letter that he wrote after the League of Nations had voted to establish a Jewish homeland in Eretz Yisrael. So he writes, how significant this decision of the nations of the world is. And he says, you should remember, Jews committed two grave sins in the desert. The sin of the Egel, the golden calf, and the sin of the Meraglim. God forgave them the sin of the Egel, but he never forgave the sin of the Meraglim. It was after the sin of the Meraglim that he says, you're all going to remain here and die in the desert. Pigrechem. I'm going to fall in this desert. Chet ha'egel, God forgave them. Chet ha'meraglim, the sin of the Meraglim, he didn't forgive. And I say that the reason is because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is meichel on his own covet. The sin of the Egel was an attack on God. This is your God, not that one. The sin of the Egel was an attack on God, and God is meichel on his own covet. But the sin of the Meraglim was an attack on Eretz Yisrael. An attack on Eretz Yisrael, God is not meichel. That's what Ramea Simcha says. Moshe Rabbeinu learns from his Rebbe. Who's Moshe Rabbeinu's Rebbe? Moshe Rabbeinu is the image of God. Moshe Rabbeinu, therefore, Korach, who attacked Moshe, that Moshe is his own covenant, Moshe forgives. But Dasam Vaviram attacked Eretz Yisrael, that he'll never forgive. And I'm going to prove to you that that's exactly what's happening over here. At the end of the 40 years, he remembers to single out Dasam Vaviram for condemnation. He will not condemn Korach again, but Dasam Vaviram he will condemn. And listen to the next few psukim. Ki einechem haro'ot et kol ma'aseh Hashem ha'gadol, your eyes have seen the great act of God, asher also that he has done. Ushmartem et kol ha'mitzvah asher anochi mitzavcha hayom, and you should keep all the commands that I command you today, leman techez kuso, you should be strong. Ubatem v'yidishtem et ha'adetz, you should come and inherit the land asher atem ovrim shomo l'rishta, the land that you are crossing there to inherit. Uleman tarichu yamim ala adoma, in order that you should have length of life on the land asher nishba Hashem la'avotechem la'teit lahem l'zalam, the land that God swore to give to your fathers, to give to them and to their children, eretz, savas, cholav, u'tefash. But we're not finished yet. Ki ha'aretz, the next pasuk says, because the land that you're coming to inherit, lo keretz mitznayim hi, it's not like the land of Egypt. What is he telling them at the end of the 40 years? What he wants to undo is the unfortunate impression that may have been left by Jews, you know, Mitzrayim is Zavas Chalav Edvash, and Eretz Yisrael is Zavas Chalav Edvash. The unholy comparison. So Moshe knows, as a great teacher, this is going to be his last shot. He has to undo the harm of that terrible, terrible statement that was made by them. And he says, remember what happened to Dothan v'Aviram. And I'm bringing you now to a land which is Zavas Chalav Udvash, flowing with milk and honey. And it's not like the land of Egypt. Don't ever make the mistake of thinking that any other land on the face of this earth is the promised land, the land flowing with milk and honey. On the contrary, Eretz Mitzrayim is a land that is watered by the canals of the Nile. But Eretz Yisrael, the great pasuk of all, Eretz pasuk 12, Eretz Asher Hashem Elokecha Doreish Ota, the land that God seeks, Tamid Eini Hashem Elokecha, by the eyes of God are constantly that land, Meideshet Hashanah V'Adachanit Hashanah, from beginning of the year to the end of the year. Vayichal Moshe Ma'od, he's not merely angry. He's in great pain. He is in great pain because Dasam V'Aviram have referred to Eretz Mitzrayim as Eretz Zavat Cholav Edvash. They've taken a term that had become hallowed as a description of Eretz Yisrael, and they have applied that now to another land. And of all places, to Eretz Mitzrayim. It is taking a term that is holy and shaming it and embarrassing it. Like taking the term Holocaust and describing some other event that is in no way similar and describe, this is Eichet the Holocaust. What happens when somebody does that, you can destroy the sanctity of a term, and the term always carries with it an idea. You can destroy the sanctity of an idea forever. You trivialize it, yes, you trivialize it. You destroy its meaning. There are words and terms that lose their meaning. I don't know. Love. I mean, love is a word that has lost all of its meaning. It has no meaning anymore. I mean, there's aren't so many other words that at one time may have inspired people. Democracy. The word democracy in this country has been emptied of all of its meaning because the people who've been talking about democracy all along are now running a police state in the name of democracy. A police state in the name of democracy. And this is the great democracy. The word democracy has no meaning. How many countries in the world have taken the name People's Republic? China is one of them. When a country takes the name People's Republic, you can understand, number one, Sinishkin Republic and Sinishkin People's Republic. In other words, terms are used as weapons. And one of the ways in which words and terms are used as weapons is when you empty them of all meaning. Everything is a democracy. Everything is a democracy today. Some of the worst dictatorships are democracies. People's republics. Some garnish to garnish. That's precisely what Dasam V'Aviram are doing. They are taking the term hallowed by God and Torah, and they are emptying it of all meaning. Yeah. Oichma Holocaust. We don't have any place where Vayichar means insulted, but the fact that Rashi chooses here to tell us that Vayichar means pain. And I'll tell you, how does Rashi have the right to do that? Doesn't Vayichar usually mean kas, anger? In most places it means anger. There are a few places where it means pain. At the end of Sefer Yonah, fourth chapter of Yonah, Yonah is sitting outside of Nineveh to see what's going to happen. God plants or makes a kikayon tree to cover him with shade, and then the kikayon is struck down by God. So God says to him, "Ha'heitev chorolecho al hakikayon." Are you very? Now the translation really is not, "Are you angry? Are you in pain? Are you in tsar because the kikayon is gone?" Rashi chooses out of all of Tanakh, where the word vayichar means anger, and he chooses here to translate it as tsar. I believe the difference between anger and tsar is, anger, I'm angry for me. I get angry. Pain, I'm in tsar for something else. It's not, if Rashi would have translated it as kas, it would have meant that finally somebody got to, got Moshe. No? Got Moshe good and angry. Which would have indicated that Moshe's anger is because he's been hurt. You know, his own feelings, his own position. Somebody's shamed him, somebody's embarrassed him, he can't take it anymore. No, he's in tsar, he's in pain. And the tsar is for Eretz Yisrael. Not his own. Al kvodo Moshe Rabbeinu is mochel, just as God was mochel al kvodo. But al kvodo Eretz Yisrael, they have to be in tsar. I think it's very, very meaningful, the translation that Rashi chooses for this word, which normally should have meant anger. Anger is always when I'm hurt. It's the me in me that is hurt. Tsar is hurt a great deal more. I'm in pain for something or somebody else. There's so much more to say on this parasha. Right, the parasha, as we say, the parasha of Machlokes, unfortunately, is not a parasha that is easily completed. So I saw a nice word this year, and I think from time to time I will be referring to the Sefer Nefesh HaRav that came out recently. It's I think it's going to be a runaway bestseller by Rav Heschel Schefter of Rashivim, Yeshiva University. A lot of beautiful things about Rav Soloveitchik. So here he has a vort on this week's parsha, so I'll close with that. There is a connection between the story of Korach and what appears at the end of Parshat Balot, at the end of Parshat Shlach. The end of Parshat Shlach was the Parsha of Tzitzis. So why does the Parsha of Korach come after Parsha of Tzitzis? So really the Medrash explains it, and Rashi says that Korach was a demagogue of the highest order. He took his 250 rebels and he gave them cloaks of made of tchelet, all made of tchelet. Tzitzis are supposed to have the tzitzis, according to Torah, are supposed to have three strands at every corner, three strands of white wool and one of purple wool, tchelet. So along comes Korach, and he stands there before Moshe with 250 men, and they're all cloaked in garments completely made of tchelet. And he asks Moshe, I have a shaila for you. I always love when people call me up, "Rabbi, I have a shaila for you." As though I was just waiting a whole day for somebody to bring me a shaila. And every so often I'm making snide remarks and nobody gets it. They just don't get me. All right. Moshe, I have a shaila for you. A talis that's made completely of... You do that all the time?
They're not going to call you with
a shaila. No, you can call me with shailas. Just don't, just say, "Rabbi, I have a shaila." Nobody ever ends a sentence there. "Rabbi, I have a shaila for you." Shkoyach, that's just what I needed today. Renee, I know what's going to happen the next time you call. You're going to start laughing, and I'm going to start laughing. You left. Yeah. Yes. I have a shaila. Period. So he asks Moshe Rabbeinu. Maybe over here he could have said, "I have a shaila for you. Over here it would fit. There's Avi Shaila for you. A plain garment needs four tzitzis on the corner, and one has to be tcheles, purple wool, blue wool. What happens if the whole palace is made out of tcheles? Do you need the whole talus? There are 1,000 strands that make up this talus, all of tcheles. Do I need to put an additional one on each corner? And Moshe Rabbeinu paskened yes. He started laughing. It doesn't make any sense. The Medrash also says that there was another shaila that he had for Moshe. If you have a room that's full of Sifrei Torah, Tefillin, and Mezuzahs, do you need to put a mezuzah on the doorpost? Then you thought about it. It's a house of mezuzahs. I need a mezuzah. Doesn't make any sense. Obviously what's happening over here is Korach wants to say that man has the right to use his intellect in deciding Jewish law. Moshe Rabbeinu says, no, Jewish law is decided upon by God, not by man. Says the Rav, he brings the Medrash of the palace, the question about the palace, and he says the following, and this incident, I'm saying this not only because I just read it, and it's here in Parshas Korach, but it's also a theme that is developed by the Rav in other places as well. He says, just as in life there are things that we understand and things we don't understand, there are things that are not clear to us and things that are not clear, there are events that are comprehensible and those that are not comprehensible to us, so too in halacha, in other words, in Torah and in life, there is the rational and the irrational, the comprehensible and the incomprehensible, that which is understood, that which is not understood, that which is clear and that which is not clear. That's the way it is. Says the Rav, the white strands of tzitzis, white represents clarity, something that is clear, something that is understood. The fact is that our rabbis use the term when they want to say something is understood, michuvar. Michuvar is Aramaic, means it's white. Something that's white, the term white represents something that is clear, understood, comprehensible, rational, logical. What does the blue strand represent? The blue strand represents, as the Gemara says, tchelet is similar to the color of the sea. The sea is like the very heaven, and the heaven is like the Kisei HaKavod, the throne upon which God sits. Which means that the Tchelet therefore represents something that is above and beyond us, something that we may not be able to understand with our rational minds. And therefore he says, regardless of who you are or what you are or what kind of cloak you are wearing, you always have to have the strand of Tchelet, because regardless of how great a Talmud Chacham one is, regardless of how intellectual one is, there are always areas of life and knowledge that are going to remain concealed, that one will not be able to know on his own, and what he may need is his Rebbe, who's going to tell him what was said at Sinai. Torah was never given over to us completely in its entirety that we should be able to make decisions on our own. Because while a great deal of Torah may be white, there is part of it that's blue. And that blue is never crystal clear to us. What Korach was saying, Kol ha'edo kulam kedoshim, the entire community is holy. U'betocham Hashem, and God is in their midst. We don't need anybody to rule over us. We know it all. And Moshe Rabbeinu was telling him, no, it's not so. You cannot be certain of everything, neither in life nor in halacha. You need a Rebbe. Rav even said, a Gadol B'Yisrael also needs a Rebbe. Who is the Rebbe of the Gadol B'Yisrael? And I'm certain that he was talking about himself, because then it will immediately bring to mind, to people who have heard him, it will bring this to mind. He says, even the Gadol B'Yisrael needs a Rebbe, and when he paskens Shaila, what he has to think to himself and see in his mind's eye, would my Rebbe have approved of what I'm doing now? How would my Rebbe have viewed the decision that I am going to render now? So this is what he's telling. Korach wants to throw off the yoke of a Rebbe. We're all holy. We all know. We can all paskin. If we have the white strands alone are enough. Moshe already tells him that it's a terrible, terrible mistake. Everybody has to have a degree of humility. Nobody knows it all. Nobody is ever capable of knowing it all. We never understand life fully. We can never understand Torah fully unless our decisions are based on what we received from our Rebbe and our Rebbe from the Rebbe before to Sinai. What Korach really wants to do is sever the relationship to Sinai. Korach is ready to begin a new period. Having broken with Jewish history, having broken with Jewish tradition, and ultimately the break with history and tradition is ultimately the destruction of those who do it. We are living in a time when an attempt nearly unparalleled in Jewish history is being made to break completely and utterly with Jewish history and Jewish tradition. And what these people don't understand is by their breaking with history and tradition, they are literally removing the ground from under their feet. If we don't have rights to Yericho and to Azal, then we don't have rights to Tel Aviv and to Herzliya. We're pulling the earth out from under us. God forbid they will be swallowed up. Because there's no longer any basis upon which to make any claim over here. We have no claim anymore. We've lost they have attempted to make us lose any validity of our claim. Our claim is based on history, tradition, halacha. The moment you separate yourself from that, it's all over. And therefore there's no choice. The earth has to swallow them up. And what they're doing, of course, is they refuse to recognize, and this may be the great tragedy of today, they refuse to recognize the uniqueness of Eretz Yisrael. This is Zavas Chalav Edvash, and that's Zavas Chalav Edvash. No uniqueness about this land, no uniqueness about our relationship with this land. We have a relationship with this land. Other people have a relationship with this land. It's a terrible mistake. And therefore Moshe is bizarre, because Klal Yisrael can flourish only when Klal Yisrael knows that their relationship with Eretz Yisrael is different than anyone else's.